Bonjour everyone and welcome back to Casser les lignes, the French football podcast with the accent. And since it's the international break, we decided to make a bit of a special pod with a very special host. I am joined today by Zach Lowy, Zach from Breaking the Lines, and you know Zach that I've joined recently. Zach, how are you, man? Thanks for being here.
Bonjour. Bonjour. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm very glad to be on Casser les lignes. You know, I've been enjoying this podcast a lot. So I'm super excited and really excited to be definitely getting into this discussion today.
Really appreciate having you on. You know, of course, I'm sure everyone who listens to Casser les lignes knows Zach, but I was pretty humbled, honored to join the Breaking the Line group a few weeks back, and I'm happy to be blabbering about French football all along. Before we get into our pod, maybe for our listeners that are not aware of what you do at Breaking the Lines, you just want to talk for a minute or two about Breaking the Lines and what you do over there?
Yeah, I mean, with regards to Breaking the Lines, we pretty much do a bit of everything, honestly. I mean, I'm the co-founder of Breaking the Lines, and I'm in charge of, you know, running, working on articles, editing them, getting up, working with podcasts and stuff. So we've really been, you know, expanding a lot over the past few months. And I'm very proud of it in terms of expanding our podcast material. I think we've done a great job of that.
Look, if you guys haven't listened to, you know, Corta Linhas, the podcast about Portuguese football is amazing. And the Tactic podcast is great as well. All the articles are definitely quality. Really good to have Zach here. Let's sort of dive into what we're going to talk about. So international break, of course, there's going to be a bit of French national team playing. So we're going to discuss, you know, what to expect for the next couple of games. Not that are going to be the most interesting games that France has played, but they still have some worth. And then we'll quickly kind of like recap a little bit what we've seen in Ligue 1 since the beginning of the season. France to start with. So a couple of games to play this week, at home against Kazakhstan and away against Finland to wrap up the World Cup qualifier to Qatar 2022. France basically just needs a win out of those two games. I mean, I'm sure even a couple of draws would be enough. And they get through to the World Cup, which with their group, you know, France, Ukraine, Finland, Bosnia-Herzegovina and Kazakhstan, you wouldn't expect them not to go through, but there's a chance that they go through undefeated, which is always good for morale. Of course, France won the Nations League last international window last month. Zach, I mean, you know, I know that you follow France from close. What did you think about the French national team, I guess, post-Euro trauma?
The post-Euro trauma? I mean, with regards to the post-Euro trauma, I think that France were, it is fair to say that France were the biggest disappointment of the Euros. You know, they have the most quality of any squad in the world. And a team like that, you're always going to expect to get to at least the semifinals and at least, you know, play decent. And France did neither of those. So I think it's fair that there was some, you know, some criticism. You know, it's obvious that French people and French fans like to complain. And I mean, obviously you're going to get that, right? But I feel like some of it was overblown. You know, I think Giroud came out this week and said something like Benzema messed up the balance or something of those lines. And basically like blaming Benzema for that stuff, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But, you know, sometimes it's not your year. You know, sometimes it's just not your year. And it wasn't France's year. But with that being said, I do think that they have the most quality of any team in football in many areas. And, you know, that gap may not be as big as it was in 2018. It definitely isn't as big, but with that being said, you know, they will be considered a threat no matter when.
And you know, I think it's very France as well to start the Euro with a proper football game against Germany and to resist Portugal and then to get taken out by Switzerland. And we've seen that at the Nations League, right? Now they play against Spain and Italy, Belgium and Italy, and they really show up and they really decide to actually play the football that they're supposed to play, and then they win those games. Is that, you think, always going to be the issue with France? They just really level up against the big teams, and then they will always run that risk of being surprised against, smaller nations, all due respect to them?
Yeah, I think that is an issue with France. I mean, I think that the thing is, I mean, France found a way to win and stay defensively secure in 2018. And the fact that it worked so well, I think, is always going to, you know, cause Deschamps or whatever the manager is to stick what's been giving you results. But I think that's almost caused some harm for France. And I think they are playing under their potential to a degree. And you will often see that, like, when you see this France team play against other sides that want to do the same thing and then sit back and soak up pressure, they don't really know what to do. But I mean, I do think that France's switch to a wingback system, it has the potential to cover up some of those flaws and make them less predictable. So I do give Deschamps credit for recognizing that it's becoming a bit predictable.
It's true. It's probably one of the first time in Deschamps' career that the issue technically was the defense. I mean, you know, Switzerland, you're up 3-1 with 10 minutes left, and then you're going to concede twice. And it's just not as tight as it's been in 2018, where, as you said, the whole tactic was drop down and, you know, defend low and then operating counter-attack with Mbappe. That was relatively unknown back then, but now they can't play this way anymore because people know, and I agree with you, credit to Deschamps to change that. The defense, though, even with three defenders, it's Varane when he's not injured, and of course he's injured right now, and then it's either Kimpembe or Zuma or maybe Koundé. It's just not as solid as it's been in the past, is it?
No. I mean, with regards to the defense, yeah, I mean, it hasn't been as solid. And I think that part of that is also due to individual declines. You know, I think that, for example, a guy like Varane has definitely not been as solid as he was in 2018. You know, you have, looking at other, it's a bit ironic because France definitely have the best quality in terms of central defenders, but it's like they're lacking that something. You know, I think that also finding players who fit a back four and finding players who fit a back three is a completely different thing as well. You know, I mean, that's something that, like, France as a nation typically don't typically see that, right? Back threes. I mean, we've got examples like Len, but they're definitely an exception, right? I can't think of many other teams like that have traditionally trained with that. So That is definitely, absolutely, yeah. I mean, you have to put that down as well, the lack of defensive solidity. It's really, you know, a whole thing, right? It's like looking at the total, you know, you have to look at the entire picture, I think. And the lack of defensive solidity is absolutely one of those things.
Yeah, and I think, interestingly enough, I was discussing that in another pod recently. We were talking about the fact that there's less and less star strikers. And while we were digressing, we realized that we can't name a country that has a pair of central defenders that are world-class anymore. We can find like one, Italy, okay, but they're a little bit older. Spain, one of the two. Belgium, one of the two. England, maybe one of the two. You know, South America is about the same thing. And France had always had that, you know, tradition of being able to train and being able to get out of their academies 4, 5, 6, 7 world-class central defenders, which right now we have great defenders, but we don't have the star. Anyway, that kind of brings to the next topic when it comes to France. If the defense isn't that good, there has to be a shift in tactics, which Deschamps has done, and you have to focus on where the talent is. And you know, undoubtedly the talent for France is up front right now. Karim Benzema is in the form of his career, and at past 30 years old, it's definitely commendable. Kylian Mbappé is getting stronger and stronger as it goes. And then there's Antoine Griezmann, who's, you know, having ups and downs, but you have people like Diaby, Martial, Coman, strikers coming left, right, and forth and center to play for France. Do you think that's the time for Deschamps to consider, you know, I guess Sampaoli style in Marseille, it's okay to concede three goals as long as you're going to score five? Is that where you think Deschamps should go?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's as black as white, black and white as that, but yes, I mean, I think right now the talent for France is definitely up front. I mean, I wouldn't, it's interesting because they don't quite have the same depth that they do in defense, but when you look at just the quality of those guys that they have, you know, Griezmann, who like you said, you know, is sort of growing into his time, you know, had a tough start at Atletico, but is gradually, you know, growing back into his best form, really seemed to like only needed a, you know, a bit of time adjusting to it, and had a good performance against Valencia on Sunday. You've got Mbappe, who I would say has been PSG's best player so far. Benzema, who, you know, is absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I thought it was just pretty ridiculous when people tried to blame Benzema for their Euros thing. I mean, I can't say that I'm a fly on the wall for the France locker room, but if there's anything that brought the team down because of Benzema, it was definitely, you know, off the field or locker room related stuff. It definitely wasn't on the pitch, because Benzema was France's best player in the Euros, and, you know, was played a key role obviously in their Nations League. So I think that's a bit ridiculous. And of course, we haven't talked about, you know, some guys who aren't getting the call up, Christopher and Nkunku, plenty of other guys, you know, who in my opinion could play a massive role for France, but for whatever reason aren't getting that call to Les Bleus. But I think that the talent is definitely up front. And as a manager, you need to be able to mask your weaknesses and play to your strengths. I think that part of what we're seeing from Deschamps is an effort to do so.
I couldn't agree more with Benzema and how ridiculous those claims are. And I think, you know, to talk broadly about what happened in the French national team, I think Giroud is paying now the things that he's said in the media and that he keeps saying in the media by not being called in the French national team. That's very Deschamps to, you know, not wanting anybody in the team who's going to talk shit about the squad. He's protecting his locker room that way. And if Giroud is not going to, I guess, drink the Kool-Aid and agree with whatever Deschamps' choices are, then Giroud is not going to be in the French national team. Very much like the reason why Benzema wasn't in the team for probably about 5 years. I think Benzema coming back in actually offered an outlet to Didier Deschamps to say, sure, your defense isn't that good anymore, but look how good those three up front can, you know, combine together, adding, of course, players like Pogba or even Rabiot, who sort of looks good when Benzema is around him, or when Tchouameni came in even. I think Benzema is definitely bringing in that leader role that Griezmann had lost a little bit when he was at Barcelona, and hopefully he's going to come up. Benzema also kind of brings into a players like Mbappe the experience of a striker who has proven years and years in a very big club. And he's probably, you know, if anything, I would say that in the locker room, Benzema probably has that that good influence because he's a humble guy, despite how he's being depicted in France, where he's probably telling Mbappe, just relax, slow down, keep working, because if anything, Benzema is the worker. You've seen them playing, Benzema, Mbappe, Griezmann. What did you think about, I guess, how they understand each other on the pitch and how they develop their football offensively?
I like it. I mean, I think that there needed to be a change from the previous thing. You know, I think that looking at what worked so well from 2018, obviously, Deschamps needed to find that balance, which isn't easy to do. I mean, just look at Mauricio Pochettino at Paris Saint-Germain now, you know. But he found that balance with Matuidi playing as that wide shuttling midfielder, Mbappe playing off the right, Griezmann kind of in an interesting role in the 10 role where, you know, asked to cover a ton of ground, and work very hard, but also play, act almost as a link between midfield and attack. And then of course you have Giroud playing as sort of a, I guess, a focal target man, a focal point. And I think there was definitely some need to change that. You know, I think that Deschamps tried to recreate the Matuidi experience with Rabiot, which hasn't, in my opinion, hasn't really gone to plan. And sometimes instead of like trying to replicate the old blueprint, you need to find a new one. And I think that's, in many ways, that's what Deschamps has done. You know, I think that getting these three players who are, you know, without a doubt, I think France's three best attacking players, getting them all on the same page is absolutely massive for them. And it's like you have to, it's very hard to pin those all to find the balance that will suit Benzema and these other guys, you know. So you've got, for example, you've got Benzema, you've got Griezmann and Mbappe, all of which, you know, aren't necessarily considered like those focal points, you know, aren't really considered. They're all very technical, highly gifted players who you are used to being kind of, shall we say, having a free role. So you need to find that balance. And I think that looking at what we're seeing lately, I think that is what Deschamps has tried to do. Personally, I think some of the personnel is lacking, and I think that part of that is due to Deschamps. But overall, I think that it's the right move. And I, as you said, I mean, another thing is just finding the players to meet that defensive scheme.
One last player I want to touch on before we move on from the French national team is Paul Pogba. Pogba is instrumental in France. He's, you know, probably one of the French fans' favorite player when you play with the French national team. And he always shows up when it comes to big tournament. I mean, I think he had a good Euro despite the results. Clearly, he had an amazing World Cup, and he also was good at the Nations League. And yet, when it comes to his club performances, I'm not sure a lot of Manchester United fans are pretty happy with Pogba or with their team in general right now. What's your feeling about Pogba? Is he just a tournament player? Is that going to be his legacy?
Yeah, I mean, Pogba, man, very hard to have a discourse on this man. A lot of extreme opinions, you know. I definitely think he needs a change of scenery. I mean, just looking at the club aspect, I think he needs a change of scenery. I don't think it makes sense for Pogba or for United to renew his contract at this point. And I think that part of that is weighing down on his performances for international level. But at the same time, you still see his quality. I think a lot more for France than club, which is natural. I mean, France has better players than Manchester United, but not only that, France is also will typically just play better than United. They have that balance. Pogba, you know, knows, I think, his role a lot better in France. So at the moment, you know, despite his lack of form, I still think that you give him a pass, and I don't think you drop him from the team because, you know, he's done so well. And frankly, I mean, I think that he's one of those players who, I'm not saying that he plays a lot better for his international team than club team. You know, I don't think he's like, for example, Eduardo Vargas or like, you know, Lucas Podolski or whatever, but he is one of those players who I think, you know, no matter how bad his moment is at the club level, I think you still got to give him that chance to shine. And I also think that his style works very well with regards to how France want to play football.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, like you said, I think he's never going to be dropped because he does show up when he comes to France, and France will need him at World Cup 2022. We're going to close on France. I mean, I guess from what you just said, we probably are on the same opinion there. There was a lot of chat about Deschamps potentially needing to be dropped after the Euro and not playing on the World Cup. I do feel like he's still the man for the job. And we know that after the World Cup, he's finished because he wants to go back to clubs. He even said it himself. Do you think that he is the man for the job and that he can bring France to a third World Cup, a third little star on the shirt?
I mean, I don't know if he's the man for the job, but I definitely think he's the man for the next 12 months. You know, I think that any team who, like, even a guy like Deschamps, who's done so much as a player and a manager, I think any team that tethers themselves to one coach because of their previous accomplishments is just bound to drop their standards and fail. But for me, I mean, there's absolutely no question that he should be given the chance to see this out and you know, either complete his cycle in Qatar or prove that he deserves another one, you know. So I think that, look, the Euros was an absolute massive disappointment, okay? And as someone like Deschamps, you just cannot, you cannot justify going out to Switzerland and, you know, not only that, but playing a very poor standard of football. You just can't do that. And frankly, I think that there's, like I said, there's no question that Deschamps should be given the next 12 months and, you know, a chance to take this team to Qatar and, you know, hopefully get their third World Cup. But at the same time, I don't see how you can look at France's performance and think that he should just be guaranteed, especially with someone like Zinedine Zidane, you know, just waiting in the wings. I think that having a change of scenery, having a change of pace is good for any team, no matter how loyal you want to be to a manager. And I think that a lot of national teams, looking at, you know, even it, like, for example, Spain and Uruguay, right, with Vicente del Bosque and Oscar Tavares, you know, with Uruguay, I definitely think that you can argue that managers, legendary managers who overstayed their welcome, you know, caused those teams to decline in some ways. So I think you need to recognize when it's time to turn the new page, you know, and that's something that France are going to have to decide soon. You know, that is definitely something that they will need to have a discussion about. So I'm not, like I said, I think that with what Deschamps has done, he absolutely needs to be given the next 12 months. But frankly, I mean, Zinedine Zidane is a good coach. You know, he's a very good coach. And I think that, I definitely think that he is holding out for that job, for that position as France manager. I'm not saying that he would be he would have more success, but I definitely think at this point you have to at least give that consideration. You know, top class managers like him simply don't just, not only do they not grow on trees, but they also aren't often willing to settle for an international job, you know, which, you know, I would argue is probably a step down from Real Madrid. But so, I mean, the fact that he wants to take this position, it's definitely something that shouldn't be ignored. So I don't think it's disrespectful to Deschamps to say, like, okay, we appreciate what you've done for the team. Let's see how this World Cup goes. If it doesn't go so well, your time here is up and Zidane can come along. You know, it's not like you're saying that he's a lame duck, right? It's not like you're saying that he's already been appointed a successor. I mean, Brazil basically confirmed that with Tite, like, yesterday with Xavi's press conference, saying that, like, Xavi had been guaranteed, and basically saying that Tite was going to step down after 2022. This is absolutely not that, okay? So, you know, you have to understand when it's time to cut the cord. And I think that, for me, there just haven't been enough signs of improvement from France to suggest that Deschamps, that, you know, no matter what happens in 2022, that he should be given the time. Right now, I'm probably leaning more towards cutting the cord after 2022 and moving on to Zidane. But like I said, you know, it really depends on how Qatar goes.
Yeah, and I think if all goes well and Deschamps does bring them to a third title, living on a high would be really, really beneficial for him, because anything else than reaching the finals, unless it's like a semi-final defeat against, you know, a big team or whatever, will be seen as another failure for Deschamps, and then he's hurting his brand basically. So he's going to have to get there, and sort of luckily for France, he's going to get there with a chip on his shoulder. So maybe he's going to bring France to the end. But I definitely think that he needs to be the one saying, I'm out after that. And like you said, leaving the room to Zidane, who hopefully by then will still be available, but we never know. Everything goes fast in football. All right. That's for France. Let's talk about the bread and butter. Ligue 1, and Ligue 1 has had a pretty phenomenal season so far, a third of the way through 13 games, and Paris Saint-Germain is flying over the competition, but we've seen some nice surprises behind them. Before we talk about domestic league, in European competition, Ligue 1 is having probably their best season in a decade or so. You know, before the start of the Champions League, France was actually getting behind Portugal as far as the UEFA rankings, and there was a chance that they would lose a European qualifying spot next year. And then the game starts, and there are some hard draw from some of the teams. And 24 games in, French teams have only lost one game, 12 wins and 11 draws. Not necessarily something that we saw coming. What did you think of the performances of, you know, Paris, Lille, Monaco, Lyon, Marseille, Rennes? Maybe we'll start with Paris and their unconvincing great results.
Yeah, I mean, it has been, it's been interesting. I think that Ligue 1 teams are definitely doing a lot better. Probably the best they've done in Europe for a while. You know, PSG obviously is, you know, they didn't have an easy group. In fact, you could argue they had one of the toughest groups with Leipzig, mm-hmm. Bruges, and Manchester City. And, you know, I always joke that, like, Mauricio Pochettino is getting the most criticism for any coach has ever gotten for someone who has, like, won pretty much every single game. And, I mean, with good reason. But it is kind of funny with regards to that. Lille has been an interesting case as well. I mean, right. Lille are a team that, you know, have had a very poor season under Josu and Gorvenek. I think most people who follow Ligue 1 expect them to take that step down. But they have actually done okay in Europe, which I think is interesting. I mean, looking at that group, you've got, what, Wolfsburg, Sevilla.
Yeah, and Salzburg.
Salzburg. So, you know, obviously not many big guns there, but at the same time, it's like, you know, it's fairly impressive what they have done in the Champions League. I think Monaco should be in the Champions League right now. I think they were very unlucky to not make it past Shakhtar in the qualifiers. So it's a shame that they're not in it, but you know, given how they've done under Kovac this season, I'm not sure if they'd necessarily be really, you know, punching above their weight. But yeah, Lille, it's been interesting. We'll see. I mean, how well they've done. Obviously, getting a win against Sevilla on, you know, last week. And I believe they've got matches with, again, Salzburg and Wolfsburg coming up. So definitely going to be interesting to see if they can. I think that would be great if they could get into the knockout round of the Champions League. They could make some noise. Lyon, you know, despite their struggles under Peter Bosz this season, I believe they've been perfect in Europa. Mm-hmm. Monaco been doing pretty well. I was watching their match against PSG on Thursday and a bit unimpressed
Pretty
with the
boring game.
pretty boring game, yeah. And yeah. So that I think that's one of yeah, but they're I believe they're still on top of that table, which isn't a very easy group. And Marseille, on the other hand, have been
All the
not
draws.
great in Europe. Been probably the biggest disappointment of the French teams. But at the same time, they are still just a point behind Lazio, I believe. So I think that obviously getting that draw did not help matters, but I think that they can still advance from that group. And who am I missing? Rennes? I think that's the
Yeah,
only
and
team that I'm I think that's the only French team that I'm missing. So
that
yeah, I
new
mean
beautiful Conference
Rennes,
League.
right, in the Conference League, right? Rennes, top of the table, doing a very good job. Grinding out some results, and very happy to see Loic Badé, a player I've been following for quite some time since his breakthrough season at Lens last season, getting his debut goal against Mora, getting them that vital win. And I think he said after match, like, I'm this is my first ever professional goal. I had a goal with Le Havre that was like ruled out due to an imaginary offside. So, like, not forgetting after like 3 years or something that his goal got ruled out. But I think that's awesome.
That was a fun interview.
So yeah.
With Paris Saint-Germain, let's try and spend a bit of time on the club of the
Yeah.
capital. Of course, there were the talk of Europe, the talk of the world of football during the off-season, getting most of their players for free. And we're talking about Messi, Donnarumma, Sergio Ramos, Gianluigi Wijnaldum, only spending money on Hakimi, basically. And like you said, Pochettino is getting a lot of slack for someone who's just getting results after results, 30, 3, sorry, 35 points out of 39 this season so far. What is the issue with Paris Saint-Germain? We just talk about them off the field. We talk about Hakimi with the guns, Herrera with the prostitute, Neymar with the wine, and Icardi and Wanda, and Ramos and the contract, and Mbappe and his interview that maybe not is allowed during the last international break, and the entrance music that want to change. And we just don't talk about football. We don't talk about the fact that we should be talking about what's going on in the rectangular pitch. What is it you think the issue with Paris Saint-Germain? It's just the egos. Poch is not strong enough. The team is just taking it slow because they don't need to be ready now. What's your feeling about it?
I mean, I think, yeah, part of that is definitely the egos. You have to remember these guys are most of them are superstars, and even if they aren't, they're still getting paid like superstars. So, I mean, I think that I think you have to look into that side. I think that Pochettino, anyways, didn't really know what he was getting into. I think that he thought it was going to be as simple as going from point A to point B. But managing this PSG team is nowhere near like managing the Spurs team, I'll tell you that. And you're dealing with guys who have made it at the top level, who've established themselves, and who know what they know what to do, who think they know what to do better than the manager, which can be very tricky. So I do. I have been disappointed by PSG, but at the same time, I think that a lot of the criticism on Pochettino is harsh. The fact is, PSG are getting results thanks to their individual brilliance. But at the same time, they've been pretty much perfect in Europe and the league. They've pretty much already wrapped the league up already. And so yeah, I think that some of the criticism is a bit overblown, to be quite honest with you. I'm not sure if there's many managers who could find that balance between Messi, like Neymar, Mbappe, Di Maria, And it's like, you know, when he took off Messi against Lyon, everybody slaughtered him. Like, oh, you son of a bitch, you don't know what the fuck you're doing. But Icardi is the one who literally got the goal, you know? So, I mean, I think that just people love to find it. PSG's issue is very complex. You know, it's not just Pochettino, who obviously, you know, needs to do better. But, you know, to say that he's the only one responsible, that's just ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. People love to find an easy scapegoat, and that's Pochettino. But don't get me wrong, he is definitely responsible for a lot of this. And I think that, you know, for example, in the Bordeaux game, I was watching the Bordeaux game, and that was definitely, I think, a microcosm of PSG's complaints, because they obviously going up and pretty much wrapping up the game early on via brilliance of Mbappe and Neymar. Then instead of pushing for that fourth goal, Pochettino decides to bring on Idrissa Gueye and Danilo Pereira. Bordeaux end up scoring two goals, and it's like a win that tastes like a defeat. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you that Pochettino can't be the only one at fault. And I think Thomas Tuchel said that really well a couple of weeks ago in an interview, saying that how much he loves being at Chelsea, because it's actually easy to manage Chelsea's players, whether in Paris Saint-Germain you're managing the player, his brother, his agent, and you're half a politician, half a diplomat, and maybe a little bit of coaching behind that, and that can't help. Leo Messi, do you think, you know, there's always been this comparison between Messi and Ronaldo, and Cristiano Ronaldo changed club and still performed, you know, maybe not as well as Real Madrid, but in United he gets a Ballon d'Or, and he goes to Real Madrid and he gets a few, and then he goes to Juve and he still wins, and now he's in United again and he's probably their savior. And then Messi, the first time he changed his club, he hasn't scored in Ligue 1 yet. And he scored three goals in Champions League out of three games, but in Ligue 1, five games, and not a goal, not an assist. Can he do it? Can he actually perform for Paris Saint-Germain? Or do you think the adaptation and the fact that the club is definitely not as structured as what Barcelona was is too much for the Argentinian genius?
Yeah, I think that Messi definitely underestimated Ligue 1. I think that he thought that it would be a walk in the park, and that, you know, and that this would all be just like I said, you know, a walk in the park. But it's not, you know, it's not. And I think that very much, you know, he definitely underestimated it. And I think it's very hard to find that balance, especially when you're used to players. You spent the past, 10 years with, like, being used to people, being used to having players playing for you, you know? And that's something that, you know, he's just going to have to deal with. He's going to have to learn to adapt to, you know? So it's tough. I'm a Messi fan. I like Messi a lot. In my opinion, he's the greatest player of all time. But the fact is, he's been a disappointment at Paris Saint-Germain. So, I mean, and that's one of those things that's like, you know, definitely always pisses me off. It's like about Paris Saint-Germain. It's like about this discourse with Paris Saint-Germain. You know, it's like, Pochettino is the only one responsible, you know, this is just terrible. And it's like, give me a break, okay? You realize how hard it is to, you know, like, Messi is not one of those players you can just, like, plug and, you know, put in wherever. People think that he is, but he's not. I think he's incredible, but to say that it's like, easy as pie to accommodate Neymar, Messi, and Mbappe at the same time. I mean, we had an article that we posted on Breaking the Lines like 2 or 3 years ago, when Neymar was linked to a return to Barcelona, and said, like, basically this is why it would not work out, and that was like in 2018, you know. So I mean, that really just goes to show you, you know, talking about about how difficult this is going to be. You know, it's not, it really is not just as easy as 1, 2, 3, you know. And I think that accommodating Messi, yeah, that's definitely going to be a big challenge for him. I think that he definitely isn't used to the physicality of the league. He isn't used to, I mean, he is used to, maybe he's not used to the just the style, you know. So, yeah, I think that it's a challenge. It's always a challenge when you move from one club to another, especially when you've only known one club your entire career.
Yeah, exactly. It's I think it's not going to be easy. And I think, like you said, Messi, Neymar have grown into their own players who like to almost do the same thing in a team, and putting them together will never be easy. To wrap up, I want to talk about those two squads that really have impressed in Ligue 1 and with two very different styles. They're second and third on the table. Lens, that we've talked about a couple of times, Les Saint-Eor from north of France, and Nice, coached by Galtier, who's won the title with Lille, of course, last season, and then moved to Nice to do a new challenge. I know that you have a nice spot for Lens, that you like how they play, that you do enjoy Jonathan Kloss onto the right wing. How impressed were you by Les Saint-Eor this season?
I mean, I've stated for a while just how good this Lens team is, and I'm a very big fan of it. I think that Franck Heis, Ligue 1 definitely needs more managers like Franck Heis. You know, I think that I think he's very much really just a very top coach, and I think that he's done a fantastic job with this Lens side. I've got to give credit to the recruitment as well. I forgot what the exact name is, the chief scout, but he's done a fantastic job bringing in guys like Chick Ducore, Seku Fofana, and Jonathan Klaus, of course, you know, someone who should definitely be getting called up for the France team. The fact that he isn't is just so ridiculous. I mean, Didier Deschamps talking about like la concurrence, you know, which I think is just ridiculous. Like, what concurrence? What competition? You know, I mean, you're talking about guys like Léo Dubois, who frankly could not shine Jonathan Klaus's fucking shoes. So I just think that's, it's just typical Deschamps, you know, wanting, you know, a big name, wanting somebody who was a star at when he was 22, not 28, which is, for me, one of the reasons why his position should be not in jeopardy, but definitely looked at. You know, I think the fact that guys like Klaus or Nkunku aren't being considered is just absolutely ridiculous. And it's a, you know, whatever. Anyways, I love this Lens team. I think they're probably my favorite team to watch in Ligue 1 right now. Seko Fofana, what a midfielder, what a phenomenal midfielder. I was very intrigued to see how they would replace Loic Badé, getting Kevin Danso as well as Christopher Wu. I think it's been interesting for sure. They look like they haven't, you know, they definitely look like they haven't skipped a beat at all. So,
the sporting director you're talking about, Florent Ghisolfi, he's one of those new generation, I guess, sporting director, only 36 years old, used to be at Lorient before 2019 and arrived in 2019 and did all those good moves. You know, of course, Lens comes back to Ligue 1 under him. And then Seko Fofana was such an interesting move, right? He was shining in Serie A. He had Inter Milan on him and Juventus, you know, taking info, and then he decides to go and sign for a team that was just promoted to Ligue 1. And a season later, he is definitely the best midfield in the league. Franquez actually gave an interview probably about 10 days ago now on the French media, on Winamax, actually, the gambling site. And he's talking about his 3-5-2. You touched on it with Deschamps. And Franquez is saying that, you know, he started playing 3-5-2 because back when he was a coach in Lorient, in the reserves, he had to put his team in 3-5-2 because that's what the first team wanted to play against. And so he put a 3-5-2 in, and he fell in love with the system because he saw how many differences you can make in the system and how many times you can change basically the animation offensively and defensively. And he said to stick with it, and we are seeing how successful it is at Lens. It's a tactic that is slowly replacing the almighty 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3 in the heart of football fans and football managers. And in Lens, with Klose on one side and Przemyslaw Frankowski on the other side, it works a treat because they are ever so dangerous. You know, 24 expected goals this season for 24 goals. They are leading the team in shots created. They are one of the most attractive teams to play. Do you think they can keep that up for a whole season? I mean, they don't play any European games, so they have time to rest.
It's going to be tricky. I think that getting to the Champions League would be incredible for them. Because they have not been in Europe for, I think, what was it, 20 years or so mm-hmm. time. And I think that they will eventually fade away, unfortunately, because as the saying goes, you know, no good things, all good things must come to an end or whatever. A lot of guys, I think, right now are probably playing above their potential. I think they are going to regress at some point. And so, you know, for example, guys like Florian Sotoka, a guy who mm-hmm. I had no idea who this guy was until like a year ago, but he's done incredibly well this season as well as last season. You know, that one of those guys who really, I don't know, who sort of, I think, has sort of just been bouncing around in for a number of French clubs and finds his way to this team. So I think that it's going to be, I think that they can certainly get to Europe, and I think that should be the goal. You know, it was a very big disappointment for them, obviously, to not secure European football. You know, and I think they will definitely be trying to get that again. There's definitely a lot of quality in that squad, though. That and that's what I'll say. And not only that, I mean, I don't think they've been fluking any results under Frank Heis. I think that they've been, they've shown that this is sustainable. That Heis has got them playing rhythm. Whereas, for example, I think Nice are a team who have probably been getting better results than their performances indicate. Which I would say is part of the Christophe Galtier DNA, you know. But I mean, looking at this Len team, there is definitely a lot of quality as well. Looking at the guys who are not even playing, I mean, I think there's what you've got guys like Ganago.
Yeah, right? Ganago up front.
Ganago. He's not even, I mean, and that's insane that he's not even starting after his fantastic start last season. Diver Machado, I'm trying to think who else. They really have a unique balance, though, looking at their wing backs, the way they interact, look at, you know, this entire balance. I think that they have what it takes to get to Europe. Champions League, it's going to be very tough, though, because you've got teams like Marseille, Nice and so on that are going to be, you know, absolutely very 100% going for it.
you touched on Nice, and I guess they are literally at the opposite spectrum of playing football than Lens. Christophe Galtier's way of playing is very Deschamps, solid defense and you know, playing fast up front. And when you have Dolberg and Guiri and Delors and Stengs and Kluivert and all those players, of course it helped. Nice, is that a team that you'd back up to actually get those results because of that more austere type of play? I mean, it worked last year for Lille, for Christophe Galtier. Can he do it again?
I think Nice should be, definitely they should be judged on whether or not they get to the Champions League, because they brought in a ton of quality into their squad. But with that being said, it's very much like it's very much, I think, it's a process. You know, Galtier, first time he took charge of Lille, you know, he was tasked with just keeping them up, which he did. next season, he managed to get them to Champions League, which was incredible. And I think speaks volumes to what kind of coach this guy is. And then they regressed a little bit in the COVID season. Then they won the title. So I think that it's going to take some time for them to adapt, no matter what, you know, absolutely. But with that being said, I think that there's a ton of quality in this team. And I think that, yeah, I mean, anything less than, you know, getting into the Champions League would be a failure, in my opinion. Because look at where Lens are in comparison financially. Look at where, you know, other teams are. Montpellier, only a few points behind them, having sold, I mean, when Montpellier sold, like, the best, arguably the best strike duo in Europe within, like, 2 days of another, like, I was just, what are these guys doing again? Do they think they're going to, like, be able to just barely stay up or, you know, whatever, like, without these? I was just, like, befuddled, you know? But, hey, give them credit. But definitely one of those, definitely a team which, you know, has absolutely not been, has not been given the credit that they deserve, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Savagnier has definitely taken all the load at Montpellier after both Delors and Laborde left, and Delors and Laborde left for Nice and Rennes to goal scoring. And I agree with Nice, you know, they backed up by Ineos, of course, and Jim Ratcliffe, who's got a bit of money, the British billionaire. So they should be getting results. I think it's time, and it's probably why they got Galtier, because they knew it was time to be serious. It's time for us to wrap that pod, Zach. I can't thank you enough for being here with me and talking about Ligue 1. Thanks for all your insights. Any last nuggets that we should know about Ligue 1 that our listeners should hear about?
No, just thank you again for having me on. It was a pleasure. Ligue 1, very underrated league, I would say. Very much not given the credit it deserves. But I think that, you know, we are one of the few English language channels who are covering that to a good degree. And I'm very glad to have this Casa La Ligne on. And I think that hopefully it gives people an understanding of just how much there is to watch, even if this is a one-horse race this season, which it very much looks like it will be. You know, it's a really fascinating league, and it's a fascinating project as well. So yeah, thank you for having me on. Definitely won't be the last. And a bientôt.
A bientôt, Zach. Thank you. Thanks for listening to Casse les Lignes, everyone. Subscribe, rate the podcast. Of course, go and check out Breaking the Lines, all the articles and the other podcast. Merci beaucoup for listening. We'll be back a bit later this week with a podcast special Lyon with some Olympique Lyonnais fans that are going to join me. We'll talk about what Peter Both has been doing this season so far. And of course, we will preview the Olympico next week, Lyon against Marseille. Thank you very much. Merci encore, Zach. And I'll talk to you all soon. Bye-bye. Thank you.